redlining structures of the state. And so they're going to talk about this industry. It's what this legacy industry was creosote. They were making creosote for telephone poles, telegraph wires, basically empire building. And I should let you guys take it away so I don't tell the whole story. Thank you so much for coming.
I'm not usually the spokesman for this group, but they put me in this position today, so guys, bear with me. What we want to really talk about is environmental racism, and that's what the Copper's plant was all about, environmental racism. In the 1900s, they brought a plant in here, Copper's brought a plant in here that had the dioxins and creosote that they treat railroad ties with and telephone poles. And people coming from the south that were headed towards the promised land, which would have been Chicago at that time in this Midwest, some of them made it to Cairo, some of them made it to Carbondale. So they got to Carbondale, and the railroad expanding in the 1900s caused the need for the railroad ties. At that time, they didn't know how dangerous this creosote was. So a lot of blacks got good jobs working with this creosote. And over the years, the creosote took a lot of lives, which we still haven't had a health assessment. In 1991, Copper's closed. They stopped making railroad ties because they didn't want to pay the federal government $2.5 million to clean up. As of last year, Copper's holdings were around $1.2 million in 2017, and Visa, who owns Copper's now, their profit was $31.81 million. So our fight with Copper's is the same as it is in Flint, Michigan. We are in Area 5 of the EPA, Region 5 of the EPA. Region 5 of the EPA is where Flint, Michigan is. They're having a water problem. We're in Region 5 of the EPA. We're having problems with the cleanup at this Copper's plant. The way they found out that that Copper's was contaminating everything was three cows died. And at that time, when three cows died, they brought the EPA in and they wanted to clean up. They ordered a cleanup. And even to this day, Copper's is still cleaning up. They were ordered to pay. They got a $4 million cleanup going on now for the North American shrew, which they're concerned about. Now, shrew is the smallest mammal, but they aren't concerned about the human life in that neighborhood. They're worried about the shrew, but not us. It's years, huh?
My name is Sheila Brown. I wanted to say, when the animals died from the creosote, then it was hush hush. When Carbondale itself realized that area was contaminated, it was hush hush until the 2000s, and that's when we. First, they wanted to do something like run a road out that way or something, and they decided not to, but we didn't know why. They wasn't going to, this was in 1990-something, but we didn't know why they didn't want to run this road out there. Then in the 2000s, we somehow received, which was my daddy, Willie Neal, received a letter from someone who stated that that area was contaminated. So then that's when we got on board, as the people in the neighborhood got on board. It was like, okay, this area is contaminated, so let's call, you know, let's call a meeting, and me and my dad, Willie Neal, we called this meeting at Thomas School, which that meant Thomas School was contaminated too. So we called a meeting, and after we called the first meeting, then people kind of got on board, like, okay, the area is contaminated. So all through the years, because I was born and raised out there, so all through the years, the fish, the dogs, the cats, the cows, chickens, things was dying, including people. So all through those years, it was, you know, it was hush-hush about the city. What the city found out for a long time, they really did keep it a secret until we said, okay, enough is enough. Okay, it was closed down, but we still wanted to know, why are people dying? So many people dying on this side. And for my Nola cancer and other cancers around Carbondale. So we was trying, right around the area. So we was trying to find out what is really going on in this neighborhood. And that's what we found. Then we came up with, okay, like I said, a letter came from an unknown person that the area was contaminated. So you can.
No, talk about the plumes of smoke.
Oh, well, I know you want me to finish.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So, okay, so I was born, again, I was born and raised in Carbondale. I was born in Carbondale. I lived at 210 East Birch Street. No, that's where I live now. I lived at that time at 401 East Ninth Street, y'all, I'm sorry. I lived at 401 East Ninth Street. Okay, to show you where I lived like right here. Okay, Copper's Tire Plant was right. If you walked out our back door and walked just a few feet farther, that's Copper Tire Plant. So people that really don't know what when I say Copper Tire Plant, some people don't know what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is a place that does Cresol, that does your, when you, back in the day, when you had a light pole, or you had, or the railroad put their railroad tracks down and they got those little cross tires, if you looked at those tires, it was black stuff around it. If you looked at a light pole, there was black stuff on it, just straight it down. That's Cresol. So, like I said, I lived there and played in the, I could tell it now that I'm grown, but I played back there on those railroad tracks in that area on those cross tires and stuff like that. We, you know, that was our playground, you know, not knowing that it was contaminated at the time. So when you talk about the tire plant, and later on then when we found out that it was contaminated, I mean, and I didn't find out until I was grown, but like I said, all through the years, I knew that people was dying and stuff from out there. But the, I'm gonna tell y'all, on a typical day of my life out there, when we walked out of our house in the morning time, it looked like fog. And then it was like some little chips of stuff falling because they burnt stuff all the time out there. So, you know, that was coming down on us. When we would come home in the evening time, it still looked like it was fog. But we knew it was just the smoke from over there. We didn't think nothing of it because, you know, we was used to it. It was, all my life, that's what I seen out there was smoke and that sudden stuff coming down and stuff. And I would break out in rashes, not just me, everybody. We were in the neighborhood. We would break out in rashes and stuff all up my face, arms and stuff. We would go to the doctor. God bless the doctor. So they would give us some medicine and tell us, you know, you're allergic to something. Okay, we eating the same thing we always ate. If I'm allergic to, what can I be allergic to that's making me break out like this? Then there was asthma. You know, everybody was diagnosed with asthma in the area because, you know, we inhaling all this stuff. Not knowing that at the same time we were contaminated. My mother raised chickens, pigs, she raised ducks. We had a horse. We probably had it out there, you know. And garden, like they talked about garden, we had gardens back then. But we had tomatoes. Tomatoes are supposed to be like this. Our tomatoes was like this. this is how big they would go, would get. But I was like, ooh, big tomatoes. So, you know, we was all happy that our tomatoes were, not knowing that this stuff is contaminated. And then walking down the tracks, I'm trying to tell y'all all this in a hurry. Walking down the track, the train tracks and stuff, picking the berries and stuff, not thinking nothing of it, you know, picking the berries off. Then next door to us, there was a garden over there where, you know, there was corn and stuff. You know, all around us was like, we thought we was eating healthy. We was all always harming our own bodies and not really knowing that, you know. So, like I said, there was a lot of people that was dying, and there was, and well, I lost a lot of family members, you know, that lived out there, because my family was like every other house out there, you know. So, you know, it's like the area is contaminated, and no one can take that from me, and I will take that to my grave, that I honestly believe that that area is still contaminated. And for years, they said it's not contaminated. Well, around 2000 and something, that's when they finally admitted, after we stopped fighting, they finally admitted, okay, the area is, the EPA and everybody, damn, area is contaminated. So, you know, now they're talking about cleaning it up. You can talk about the cleanup board.
The situation is like this. They tried to move, Brightfield tried to come in with a solar project. Everybody in town thought we were against the solar project. We weren't actually against the solar project. We were actually against what they wanted to, where they wanted to put it on the contaminated land. So her father's property, my property that I live on now, my deed is Tide Plant Place. So at one point, our land was owned by the Coppers, by the Coppers people. We have fought to try to get this land tested. They say we test south of the fence, they put a fence up now. South of the fence, they will not test. We asked the city of Carbondale to test. City of Carbondale won't test. We've asked the EPA to test. They won't test. We've asked Coppers, who was Beezer now, we've asked them to test. Nobody will test. Brightfield wanted to bring in a $40 million project that would last for 20 years, and at the end of 20 years, that project would be worth $100 million. Are you telling me that they let that project go away for to dig a hole and test some ground that would only cost $5,000? I don't think so.
But when they did test,
they tested six inches. They didn't do a good test.
They knew they should have went further down.
They could have had senior citizens with spoons do the testing.
Right.
So after the city denied Brightfield the contract, they still went and applied for the grant. We try to find out now if they got the grant. But they're cleaning up out there. They're doing a $4 million cleanup. The city is not checking for us. The EPA is not checking for us because we don't depend on them because of the flood situation. We know what's happening to them. Or Beezer. So the only thing that we can think of is that it's about a lot of black people living out there, and who cares? They're cleaning up now to get some kind of other industry in there, a brickyard or something. They rezone us every time they figure something new is coming in. A lot of blacks live out there, and that's why I call it environmental racism, is because they do not care. If they cared, they would test south of the land, south of the fence. And the only reason I believe that they're not testing south of the fence is because they know what the results will be, that the land is contaminated.
All we want is for them to leave that land alone and put up a memorial for memories of people who have died and on that side of town who have worked out there. You know it's bad when you go to work, as soon as you get home, on your front porch you got a strip. Men could not walk in their houses because they had that odor, because they had the that odor all around them, and then they had that Sutton stuff all on them, they had to pull their shoes off and clothes off in order to go into their house with their families, you know, and not knowing that that was a good thing, but they didn't know that they were trying to keep their families from being contaminated. But they didn't know that at the time. They just knew that, okay, ooh, I smell like Cresol, and just pulling their clothes off and walking in the house barefooted because they could not go in their houses because it was
Concerned citizen Marilyn Tipton, the group that just left here, making this group, she offered them 10 acres of land to farm. They came out and they looked at the land, which her land borders Collins. So she's saying, here's 10 acres of land, farm on it, just let me get vegetables. Nobody's doing it. The professionals came out and looked at it. They refused to do anything until the land is tested. We are living on contaminated land. They never did a health assessment, so we can't really tell how many people are actually dying from this poison. We had, like, the Tinsdale family, area with our family. It was 11 people in that family, and 9 died from non-genetic cancer, and 2 are sick, have been to the Mayo Clinic. The two remaining family members are sick with cancer, and it's non-genetic. They live right by Collins. So we call it environmental racism because it's a bunch of black folks out there and nobody seems to care. They come in and do a little remediation, and it's for the North American shrew, not for the human life, not for black people.
If anybody have any questions and that we can answer for you all, we will please ask us. If not, maybe if we can't answer, then maybe we can help you all find your answers.
Contamination doesn't stretch that far.
Just so happened that the person that did the testing came forward and said they didn't test it for it. They didn't go down for it. That's how we knew that they only went down just to
6 inches.
Yes.
If I understand right, you managed to stop the Brightfield project from being installed. How did you do that, and did that change the awareness in Carbondale about this issue and about the poisoning of this land?
Well, think about it. It's Carbondale. Remember I said I've been here all my life? The city of Carbondale, it was stopped simply because they felt like, okay, maybe we should take under consideration that these are our people here. So out of respect of us as people, they decided, well, we're gonna vote against these other people that's coming in here. So that's basically how it was stopped.
I disagree with that. The reason it was stopped, is because Mayor Henry came to me and he said, go out and talk with Brightfield and see what they can do. See what you guys can come up with. So I talked to the guy from Brightfield. Brightfield was saying, well, we're gonna get this program in and that program in. The city did not let Brightfield in is because Brightfield could not give them the amount of money that they were gonna be able to give to the city.
I didn't know that.
That's the real
reason. Someone told me what I just said to you. That's what.
Brightfield did not have an exact dollar amount that they were gonna give the city. That's why I think that it was canceled out. If Brightfield had came and said, we're gonna give you $1 million this quarter, $1 million that quarter, the city would have overlooked us like they've been doing. But they could not come up with a dollar figure. Mayor Henry canceled a meeting. He got with Brightfield and he said, we need to talk money. And they extended it for 2 weeks. After that 2 weeks, he couldn't come up with a financial amount. And that's what, and then we had everybody in the city, that really realized that we weren't against solar. We had a lot of people that thought we were against solar, but that wasn't the case. It was just the area. But the reason that Brightfield isn't there now is because we did complain, but it was because I believe that Brightfield couldn't come up with a mile and a half.
Yes.
So having been to one of the EPA meetings, when they came down to the Brightfield Project, do you think that their failure to include the humans involved in the Copper's plan / Brightfield Project fight, right? Do you think that their failure to include humans as a part of the environment is like expressly a continuation of the failure of federal agencies in general from integrating black bodies in as like fully fledged human beings instead of as assets of sorts to utilize and extract from?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what it is. It's just black bodies over there. If this was on the west side of town by Parish School or in that area, it would be a lot different. It's that simple. It's just a lot of black folks live out there, so why spend money to check to see how far this contamination goes? Why? They dying, you smoke cigarettes, you're gonna die from cancer. Somebody said that anyway. They're gonna die anyway. You know, so.
Yes. I also grew up in a toxic area, cancer cluster, that luckily was identified by the EPA at the beginning of the EPA as being as a national priority. It was an immigrant neighborhood in New York, in the suburbs of New York. And of course it took over 2 decades to actually clean it up, and there are all the same sorts of issues of drawing lines that are arbitrary. But as you were talking, I was really struck by the similarities in the challenges that you face in confronting these government agencies and trying to spread the word and the frustrations. So I'm both heartened and grateful for the work that you did, but it's also really depressing because we have people in these isolated clusters, and as I was trying to understand what happened in my neighborhood, I felt extremely isolated, and my community doesn't want to admit it because it brings their real estate values down.
Right.
And so my question is basically, how much are you able to connect to other environmental justice activists and activists around environmental racism? And do you feel like that is something that you want to do to share knowledge and strategies?
Two other groups we have been in contact with, one in Mississippi and one in Missouri. And we're trying to follow their lead. And it's difficult because we got a lot of, I don't want to take too much time. To give you another example, the guy that was with Brightfield, the solar people, we were in the truck together. Bo was in the truck with him. He said off the record, he said, I had problems where I live. He said it was $5,000 to dig. Once they dug, he found out that his land was contaminated. There had been a tannery there for years. He said for as little as $5,000, that land could be tested. nobody wants to do. Why? There's a bunch of black people complaining about our land being contaminated. Why not shut us up? Spend $5,000, dig a hole. If it's not contaminated, what can we say? We're not through, for the simple reason is they cleaning up, but they cleaning up for something else. We still got a fight on our hand. It's not over. They not maintaining that property over there for no reason. They coming with something new.
Yeah.
So this is a continuous fight. And they don't, it's just a bunch, I mean, it's just that simple. Just a bunch of black people complaining.
You have more time, by the way, for a couple more questions if people have questions. I have a question, maybe, but I'm so familiar with the story and all of this trouble and time and richness in a way because of the way that you have organized over time and kept your connections. And I just wanted to know if you could talk a little more about what it would mean to not have any kind of new business there on that land. You could maybe talk more about that.
It would mean everything not to have anything there. Like she says, just clean it up and have a memorial for all the dead people that died from the contamination. Just leave it alone. Clean it up and leave it alone. You know, but you got people that want money. You know, you got corporations that want money and they don't care about what happened in the past. That's what they say, it happened in the past.
So is this something about that there shouldn't be more profit made on it? That's what we feel.
What money they making now? Mm-hmm. You know? But why invest this money in this property and you're not getting any returns? So they're doing it for a reason. Something is coming eventually. And that's what we have to be prepared to fight for. You know, we don't want nothing there. That's why we were against the solar. We didn't want nothing there.
Andrew?
Yes.
I don't know exactly how to frame this question that Sarah and I have been quite big in talking about it. Because I think when you do something yourself, or there's a citizen sign, so even when you ask other people, other groups, to maybe come together to sort of fund this $5,000 to do the research, I think that there's a question of like where do you need your credibility from, and this testing, and who is how do you decide what body of information is the most important person to do this testing?
We were even thinking in terms of a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Okay, with that money.
Yeah.
We want an independent tester.
Yeah.
Okay, but if we get an independent tester and they come back with positive results that land is contaminated, we still have to argue with the EPA, we still have to argue with the little test that the city of Carbondale done, and we still have to argue with Beezer, who's saying that we're doing all the remediation you're asking us to do. So if we come up with an independent solution, an independent dig, we still got a battle of these people that say, no, well, our scientists say this. We had a meeting with the EPA a few months ago when they were talking about the new cleanup idea. And they brought a scientist with them. And they did all kind of X minus X. Nobody understood. I mean, there might have been a couple people in there that understood, but what do we know about X minus 1 million parts of? We just common people, you know? So they brought somebody in to tell us the history. We know the history, you know, of the contaminated land out there. And
this is the last question
I
will.
So up north a little bit, I mean, again, it's no one should have to face what you're facing. And, you know,
Well, they said they capped into it.
It's capped. Well, they got a bit capped out there. They got a bit with pipes coming out the side this big around.
Oh, yeah.
That's and they pumping creosote a lot of it. And also the city, one of the city commissioners said, well, look, we're going to put a track around it, a bike path around it. How many people in here are going to come to the northeast side and run around a track with contaminated land?
Yeah, they're doing the same.
You know what I'm saying? So,
a bike path.
And then we also investigated up north where Cockroach was also involved on Pershing Avenue in Chicago. They had a plant by the old Bel Air Drive-In on Cicero and 31st. We investigated that as well. Yeah, so we've been kind of, we just, and I don't know, what they call a 10-card hole? What is that? What kind of game is that? What is that? Okay. So we're in a 10-card hole.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening.
My classes, my students.